Cover That's Not Here. Hi, Cover That's Not Here. You can listen to this. So we were discussing Shiluach HaKen, or Shiluach HaKan, however you feel comfortable pronouncing it. Kan is a nest, but the word, you know, there are about a million of them, no?
Oh.
Tyler wants to recall back.
It's going to be a little repetitive. Anyway, it also means birds, just in general. So there's a whole Masechta called Masechta Eskinim. Maybe you've heard of Masechta Eskinim. It has nothing to do with lice. It has to do with nests, bird nests. So all of those people that bring korbanos from birds, so it's called Masechta Eskinim. But in any case, so the pasuk says like this. You know, each word in this pasuk is interesting and can take you in a lot of directions. Yikare kam sipur lefanecha. So that's how I started yesterday, is the word ki yikare is understood to mean like mikre. Right, what's mikre? Like a coincidence, like an incident. Mikre. So when you focus on that word, it's interesting that number one would be the word, and number two, it's spelled wrong. Because mikre is spelled with a hey, not usually with an aleph. So when it says, ki yikare kan sipur lefanecha, so pashup shat, what it means is that when you're walking around on the road, you're doing whatever you're doing, there's English on mine, maybe you're confused. These are my notes. You happen to notice that there's this bird nest. And who cares about the bird nest? So it's baderech on the way. Bechol eitz, ala aretz, it's in a tree, it's on the ground. Efreichem oibetzem, either it's chicks or it's eggs, either one. Ve'imer betzes ala efreichem o ala beitzem. And the mother is currently crouched on the chicks or on the eggs. So here comes an avera. The Torah says, lo yisikacha emal habanim. Do not take the mother literally on the children. So what does that really mean? Don't take them together, right? Don't take them together. So you have to take the chicks, or you can take the mother if you want, but you're not allowed to take them all together. Shalech tishlach es ha'im. You shall surely send away the mother. Ve'es ha'banim tikach lach. And the children you can take for yourself. L'man yitav lach barachta yomim. So that things will be good for you and you'll have long life. Which is interesting, because how many times do you find that the Torah tells us you get long life or something? There are a few, but not that many. Okay, so first things first. Ki kare is interesting, because why did he have to say it like that? Why is it there at all? So just pashup shat and pasuk. It means that this sounds like it's not something that you're planning. Ki kare, when it happens. Why is that significant? Like, is the mitzvah only when like you're not looking for it, and if you look for it, then you're not allowed to do it anymore? Doesn't seem to be true. So it's a funny way to present it. So we'll have to try to come back to that a little bit and figure out why does that say it like that. It goes to find a wife. But especially when you throw in Chazal, he knew exactly who to get. He knew exactly where he was going. There are not so many daughters. We're in like a lot of options. Basically, Avraham told him, go get this girl named Rivka, more or less. And what does he do? He gets to the well and he says, because he was an old Yiddish guy. And you know, he was black. Anyway, so he says, like, you know, please.
Well, he was. Everyone was black back then.
How do we know
he
was
black? No, he was from Cham. He was a Kanani.
Anyway.
What was he?
It's a
Drasha. He was a slave. He was a slave.
Was
he
a slave?
Well, whatever. No, I mean, technically not. There were no Jews, really. It was Avram's time. So what does that mean, you know?
Like, can you count him for a minute?
Now you have to free him first. So he goes to the well and he says, you know, God, man! I really spoke, right? Man, I need him. I need, like, a miracle. Do something! Let her show up and I'll ask her for water. And she says, okay, I'll give all your camels and then I'll give you and I'll give all your camels. Then if that's what she says, that's the girl that's destined for Yitzchak. Her brash Billy used to make a joke. He used to be one of the Rosh Hashiva in NYU. He moved over to Landers at some point. Heard he's not doing well. But in any case, say he used to tell his guys every year they would get to that parsha. I tell you what, you want to get shidduch? I give you my car. You take my car and you go to the gas station. And she says, I fill up your car and all the other cars at the gas station. You marry her.
Those cars aren't yours.
He used to say that every year. Anyway, so look, why does Eliezer need to do that? You know where you're going. Go to Rivka. What's going on over here? See, he created a mikra. He created an accident out of something that was very much not an accident. And the exact opposite is Rus. That when Rus
It says, "Vayikar mikreha," that her accident happened to her. By Eliezer of Rambam, he says, "Hakre nalefanai," make an accident for me, Hakadosh Baruch Hu. He asks that with that lashon. And by Rose, so it says, "Vayikar mikreha," her accident happened to her. You know that you don't have your accident; it just is an accident. You can't have an accident. The whole point is it's an accident. Like your accident. What was that supposed to mean? So the answer is, it was her accident because it wasn't really an accident, but it was an accident to the person seeing it from the outside. So in any case, so by shiduchim it works that way. That it's always an accident and totally not an accident. Sometimes it looks like it's mamish mina shamayim. Sometimes it looks like it's on paper. It makes a lot of sense. HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not involved. So when HaKadosh Baruch Hu looks like he's not involved, so then Eliezer made an accident out of it. And when it looks like it was totally an accident, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says you should just realize that that was her accident. That looks like it, but it really wasn't. So that's a very interesting ha'ara, is that it's calling out to a person, this is a mitzvah that I'm presenting to you, I'm giving you this incredible opportunity. So what's going on in terms of mitzvahs here? So it seems like there are two things. There's an avera, there's a los ase, and an ase. So I underline the words. Lo yisikach eimal abanim, do not take the mother along with the children. And then in Pasuk Zion, shalech teshlach ase'im, a mitzvah's ase, you shall surely send away the mother. So, Eli Mermerstein, who you heard from at the Tish, and you heard what happened? So one of the guys didn't have tefillin today. So who did we call? He's called Eli Mermelstein. So Eli Mermelstein brought over a pair of tefillin. So some of the guys couldn't have tefillin support. So in any case, see, he always wanted to know, if you really don't have any use for these eggs or for these chicks, so you're really supposed to just shoo away the mother bird and cause this pain to the mother so you can just do it the mitzvah? Why is that not Tzar Ba'alei Chaim? If you need the eggs, okay, I understand. You know, you're allowed to cause Tzar to whatever extent is necessary.
Like, you mean do it and then just, like, throw away the eggs?
Yeah, or you don't want to do them at all. Throw away, you pick them up, like, what are these for? What's the point? Well, then why'd you do that? See, is there some sort of inyan to do this mitzvah just to accomplish the mitzvah? Or it really means when you actually need them? The way to ask the question in, like, a lamdish away, is this a mitzvah chiyuvis or a mitzvah kiyumis? Chiyuvis means there's something that you have to do. This is a chiyuv. Mitzvah kiyumis means, well, you know, if you want to be makayim in certain situations, so then you can be makayim this mitzvah. But you don't have to put yourself in this situation. Technically speaking, tzitzis. Mitzvah chiyuvis or mitzvah kiyumis? Do you have to put on tzitzis? So it depends how you look at it. On the one hand, you don't even have to get tzitzis in your whole life, really. If you're wearing arba kanfus, four-cornered garments, you have to put on tzitzis. But you have to in one sense, but you don't have to in another. Many people say this in the name of Moshe Feinstein, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, making Aliyah. Mitzvah Chiyuvis or Mitzvah Kiyuvis? So we should all probably be there if it's a Mitzvah Chiyuvis, right? So as Rav Moshe writes, it's like a Mitzvah Kiyuvis, that if a person moves there, he's Makayim the Mitzvah. But it's not the same thing that everybody is like, well, who you have to do it? Put on tefillin. Gotta go make sure you get tefillin.
Are there people that disagree with that?
Yeah, I think so, probably.
Probably.
So, it's a good topic for another time. So that would be also one way to investigate the issue. Is everyone like machuyev to fulfill the mitzvah? That means if you don't need the eggs, but the mitzvah, you gotta do it. Or is a mitzvah kiyumis that if you have the opportunity and, you know, whatever, so then go ahead. But who says you're chayev to get involved? So that's a similar question. So the truth is, to investigate this issue properly, if you get involved with all the gemaras, and Rav Asher Weiss has an interesting piece where he gets involved in this idea in the beginning, mitzvah kiyumis or kiyumis. But since it's a shkafadei, so we're gonna investigate it in a little bit of an unusual manner, which is in the way of hashkafa. When we try to understand the mitzvah, so does it make sense that that's what you should do? Is this really a mitzvah that involves rachamim? Is it a mitzvah that makes sense? Or is this a mitzvah that's a chok? And so why should we get involved in what Tzar Baruch Hu, who cares? Who cares about Tzar Baruch Hu, you know? Chok means it's a mitzvah without a reason. Yeah. So on the one hand, so what we're going to do, we're going to spend a few minutes trying to understand a little bit of Tamei HaMitzvos if we can. Is there a rationale to the mitzvah? So, what do you say? There are two psukim here, right? So do you think we should distinguish between the two, or are these just flip sides of the same coin? Take a look. On the one hand, it says, Lo yisikach ha'eim al habanim. I mean, it says, Lo saseh. Don't take the mother with the children. And we'd have to ask ourselves, why not? And then, is it flip side of the same coin, or is it a separate idea? Shaleach tishlach esa'im. You shall surely send away the mother.
Separate, it's saying, I think it's saying, if you were to do this, the first one says,
you're not allowed to take the mother and the children and the sons. But the second pasuk is saying that if you were to do this, you have to do it in this way. I think you have to take, you have to send away the mother first if you were to do it.
What if you just wait till she's not there?
Does that not count if you do that?
Then there wouldn't be shiluach again because you're not doing
it. Shiloh.
But that's kind of my question. It says lo sikach eimal labanit. Don't take them both. Fine.
No, maybe just
don't take them both.
Explain what you can and can't do.
Yeah. But because like one's mitzvah lo sase, right?
The idea is to show compassion.
Is it? How do you know that?
It's like shooting the mother and then moving her body, and then she's not
there
anymore.
I don't have a Rambam there. I don't have the pasuk so far. What?
It's like shooting the mother and moving her body, so she's not there anymore. Does that not count? Because, well, that kind of defeats the purpose. Exactly. So like, no, but she's not there anymore. We're not taking them together.
It says you don't. It says send away the mother. Doesn't it kill?
Oh, you sent her away already.
By the way, Ezra just got the link.
What does it mean? I don't know. Does that count?
But that's kind of my question. In other words, is it that it's a los ase? Don't take them together. The assay of shooting away the mother bird is something proactive they have to do. Is that like critical to the mitzvah? Or that's just like, well, you know, recommended behavior, shoo her away if she's there, you know. But really what it's all about is not taking them together. You with me on the question, right? About together? Okay. So first things first. And so all I wanted to say about that was, so one may want to distinguish elements here and say there are elements of two different directions. On the one hand, maybe there is actually some kind of inyan to shoo away the mother. On the other hand, maybe something else going on here, which is even if you don't, or whatever, but don't take them both together. Maybe those are not exactly the same idea. So first things first, here's a medrash. Medrash says, V'lama ha-tinok nima l'shmayna yamin. Why is a baby given bris milah at 8 days? It's a funny question. The Torah says so. What do you want from me? Good, so that's one shot. That she's bleeding for those 7 days, and if it's a boy, so then after the seventh day, with any blood that she experiences was called the dam toyar, it's tahor blood. So theoretically, she could be back together with her husband. Practically, that's never going
to
happen.
All right, what does that have to do with the kid?
So everybody's happy on the eighth day, because the husband and wife are back together, and everybody's happy. That's the chazal like that. That's not what this measure says. This measure says a different idea entirely. But why is a tinok given bris milah on the eighth day? HaKadosh Baruch Hu rachamim alav. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had mercy on him. Lahamtin lo ad shiyeh bo kocho. To wait 8 days until he's strong enough to go through with it. Wow. V'keshem sheracham av shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu adam. Just like Hashem has rachamim on humans. Kach racham av al habehema. He has mercy on animals. Minayin had yinoshin emar miyum hashmini v'hala. That on the eighth day and on you can bring an animal as a korban, but not before that. Well, oh, not only that, you can't kill the mother and the child, like the parent and the baby of the animal, the mother and the baby, on the same day. You can't kill them both on the same day. So if you buy, it's interesting, let's say you buy an animal from someone, and he's selling the mother and he's selling the children. So it's a little bit sketchy, because you have to make sure you're not killing them the same day as the other guy. He's killing the mother. How are you going to know, you know? So you got to have a mashkiach, I guess.
Why are you buying an animal in the first place?
You were hungry.
Yeah, but we're not in the time of Bruno.
Oh, well, Bruno will take care of it.
Bruno.
So Hashem has rachamim on humans. Wait till the eighth day before giving bris milah. Hashem has rachamim on animals. Oso v'espero, you can't kill them both on the same day. Ukishem shenasana kadosh baruch rachamim ala behema. Kachnis mele rachamim ala oifos.
Just like
we have mercy on
the
things, we have mercy on the birds.
Hashem. Not us, right? Hashem. So in the mitzvah, Hashem has mercy. So is this mitzvah a mitzvah of rachamim? Meaning, is this explaining the reason for the mitzvah?
It could be a reason, yeah.
But the reason is, what? In other words, how do you see in this Hashem has rachamim on the birds?
It doesn't cause unneeded pain.
Which
has to prevent it.
Not like, we have to go after it and...
Okay, so here's a point. Again, everything I'm saying now I mentioned yesterday, so if I'm repeating it, but hopefully it'll be easier to remember, and if you're here, you'll get it the first time. Hopefully. Rav Kahn mentioned a bunch of times, when you learn a Gemara, you learn a Medrash, and it quotes a Pasuk. You learn a Rambam, anything, a Rishon, it quotes a Pasuk. A lot of times you'll notice it says, etc. V'chulei, v'gomer, you know what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. That means that the entire Pasuk is not quoted. So what's the pshat? Is it the pshat that the essential point that the Gemara, the Medrash, the Rishon is making is in the words that he quoted? Or is it that it's quoting a pasuk, etc., and the essential part may be in the etc.? But everybody knows Pesukim, so I'll just quote you the pasuk, you know. You can look it up. So many times you'll notice, Rashi will spell it out occasionally, and say, don't get nervous, it's in the end of the pasuk that's not quoted. Yeah? So if a pasuk is quoted in this medrash, we have to ask ourselves, is that the essential part? Or that's just, you know, oh, by the way, you remember that pasuk? Oh, yeah. Oh, I'll talk about it over there. So that's why Ariel is saying that there's rachamim that Hashem has on a mother bird. So I would argue, because you shoo away the mother bird so she doesn't have the pain of seeing her children taken away. When she returns, there's not going to be any eggs or chicks in the nest. So okay, I don't know, you got to figure out how much do birds think about these things. Do they just instinctively feed the young? Or do they like see they're not there anymore and start crying? I don't know.
Probably crying.
When we left,
they flew up on their own.
They grew up and they flew away. That's also sad. When we left Toronto, my mother has a little dog. I don't remember what it is.
What?
A little dog.
Golden doodle?
No, it's something else. It's a Remy. That's its name. I don't know what it is. But anyway, so it was. If you could call a dog in tears, this would have been a dog in tears. She was like whining that all the children were leaving. So, okay, is that only because like she saw them and if she had woken up the next day, you know, she would have been sleeping because she was so tired from the previous week? I don't know, but would she
leaving. It's mainly leaving.
It's the leaving.
Yeah, for dogs, yeah, it's mainly leaving.
So it's the same kind of idea then, that when the eggs are being taken, so then the mother would be upset. But once they're just not there anymore, so then who says that she really notices or pays attention? So that's what I probably would have said, that the Medrash is saying that the rachamim of a Kadosh Baruch Hu is what? Is in the shooing away of the mother bird. Not on the mitzvahs losa say, I'm not taking them both at the same time, but in the shooing away, in the mitzvahs assay element, of shooing away the mother bird. That's probably how I would have read this medrash. I think that's wrong. Why?
Because it says a kishon
b'chol. She'll still be upset.
Maybe, maybe not.
Science?
So it's hard to know.
Science, you said?
There's got to be science on this, whether or not the bird actually. Bad
signs or science?
Science.
Perhaps. But what's the Medrash saying?
Science.
What's the Medrash saying? So if we're going to insist that this Medrash is telling us the reason for the mitzvah, and the reason for the mitzvah is rachamim, so that can't possibly be
shy. The Rashbam says something different.
So it can't possibly be shy. You know why? Because, you know, When you write Becker on your tefillin bag, has anyone ever told you that it looks like the word Bakar? Or Boker? Or Becker, I guess.
Yes.
So it's interesting. So, it can't be that the Medrash is saying this is the reason for the mitzvah. You know why?
Nope.
Is there a reason for Bris Mila, Rachamim?
No.
But that's how it started. Hashem has Rachamim on people! Because he waits till the eighth day. Oh, because Bris Mila is all about Rachamim? So how do you understand that part of the Medrash?
You don't? You just go along with it?
No! Try again!
So,
no, seriously, what's the pshat? So the pshat becomes obvious now, no? The Medrash is saying that in mitzvos that are violent in nature or insensitive in nature, there's nonetheless always an element of rachamim present.
That it could have been more violent?
Imagine Bris Mila.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, it doesn't exactly reflect Rachamim, does it?
No, but what's Rachamim? That it could have been a lot worse.
That Hashem waited until the eighth day when the child is strong enough and it's that's some element of Rachamim. Doesn't make the mitzvah Rachamim. So I would argue that once you see the context of this Medrash is not indicating to us that the mitzvah, Shiluach HaKen, is a mitzvah of rachamim. It's telling you there are elements of rachamim in every single mitzvah, specifically those that, on the surface, what? Seem like they're the opposite. You with me on that? This Medrash is not picking on typical mitzvahs and saying, oh, there's rachamim in tzitzis.
Is there rachamim in killing all of the malek?
Right, maybe the Mar would have should have said something like that. Maybe there's not in that case, because maybe the Rachamim is misplaced. But in any case, my hunch is that this Medrash is trying to pick on things that were, on the surface, the opposite of Rachamim. I'm pointing out those Rachamim even in that. Okay. Why am I telling you this? Because there are those that insist that this is Tamei HaMitzvos, that this is the Medrash telling you is a mitzvah Rachamim. And I think that's a misread of the Medrash, so be careful. And we already pointed out that it quotes a pasuk, and as for now, we're going to assume that it's the end of the pasuk that's really critical, right? Maybe even the next pasuk. But it's not really the words that are quoted. Are you with me on that? Okay. Next. Who wants to read Rashi? Chaim. Shai, go ahead.
Lo tikach ha'em al ha'ben.
That's the Mrs. Lo Sase. Okay.
Who's Chaim?
There's no Chaim.
Yeah, there is.
Not here. Chaim Ehrlich. Chaim Ehrlich is the Chaim of the Shir. I'm just saying, it was funny to me. Sometimes I entertain myself. I hope you don't mind. One time, I was at a Shir, and the guy was going to call on somebody, but he didn't know anybody in the Shiva. So he just says, Chaim! And he's waiting for someone to look at him, because his name is Chaim. There's always a Chaim. So he says, Chaim! He's like, huh? It's like, read! Sorry, I was just entertaining myself. In any case, Shai, go ahead. Derech Eretz. So first things first, that this is talking about Derech Eretz. You have to have good midos, you have to be sensitive, you have to have Derech Eretz. Okay. Haminim. So the minim means like the Christians, those who are trying to reject the Torah. So in order to teach midos, and in order to answer those people that are trying to destroy the Torah, so bechalevi lo sebashal gidi bechalevi mo. I already explained this general idea in the prohibition of cooking milk and meat together, and also in another place.
V'chein
Zarius. Yeah.
Tanos.
Right. So one second. So I explained it also in Oso Vesbino, which we saw in the Medrash, right? That means you're not allowed to kill the mother and a child on the same day, right? So in those places, I explained two inyanim, 2 points. Number one, Achzarius. What's Achzarius translated to?
Responsibility.
What?
Responsibility.
That's Achrayim. Yeah. Achzarius.
I don't know. My mom tells me that all the time.
Your mom calls you an Achzar? Oh, yeah, yeah. It means like an insensitive, cruel person. Hmm. Sounds great. Anyway, talk to me after class. Yeah. Achzarius is a cruelty. That is dome. It's similar to cruelty. Your Rapsonus. Rapsonus, nowadays, I think if you put in Google Translate, you'll end up with greedy. No, I don't think that's
right.
Yeah, Rapsonus is like a person that's so starving, he just like gobbles down the food. Not eating like a mensch. So if a person goes ahead, he's got to check the mother, he's got to check the children. Like it's like he's number one being cruel, and number two, like he's not calculating things properly. He's just like, you know, he's got to eat, got to gobble it down. Where's Bruno when we need him? So that's like a Rav Zonus. However it is, to kill or to cook, that's why basar v'chalav, milk and meat, is phrased as the mother and the child. That's his point. Because we know that's not the halacha, right? The halacha is milk and meat. But when it comes to the presentation of the Torah, it's gidi b'chalev imo, which means it's the mother's milk. So there's an element of additional cruelty and rafsanus here. Okay, but in any case, so what do you see from this Rashbam? What is the reason for the mitzvah of shiluach haken? What does he say? Two things, where are they? Is this thing on? Anyone there? What are the two things the Rashbam says? They're underlined.
Cruelty and starving greed.
Okay. So it's cruelty, it's insensitivity, and it also looks like a person who's not in control of his diapers. Good?
Good.
Okay. So we have a reason according to the Rashbam who explains on the pasuk. The Ramban, should I say to you outside? Everybody's so tired.
No one wants to come to YU today.
We're not in YU!
I feel like I'm in YU.
Oh, man!
It's a good thing.
But you had beagles and cookish.
I want more.
There's more. It's over there. There you go. He has like half a thing left.
That's so much.
Someone's got to eat it, Tyler.
Can we do jumping jacks right now?
You do whatever you want, man.
Can I ask a random question
Don't
about...
Don't jump too high.
Can I ask a random question about what you do with Filipino?
Yeah.
So, like, is that also, like, a Navera? Like, you're not allowed to literally cook, like, a goat or whatever it's one of those milk? Like, that's because...
Is it worse if it's the mother?
I'm asking, like, if you took it in, like, a different milk, is that okay? Like, yeah, I can eat it, I think.
Obviously not, right? That's not the halacha, but that's how it's freeze in Torah.
So you can do it another milk or no?
No,
not as well as milk, different milk.
Right, it's meat and milk.
No, that's just like, you're not allowed to mix it.
You're not allowed to eat it if it's been cooked together. You're not allowed to cook it in the first place.
Oh, okay.
And if it's been cooked together, not only you're not allowed to eat it, you're not allowed to get any form of benefit from it. You can't even feed it to your dogs.
Like,
did you know that? You're not allowed to feed Basa Bakhala to your dogs?
I did know that.
What? Yeah,
you're not
of
allowed
course.
To feed Buster Bakhala to your dogs?
Get any benefit.
Sure, cats though you are allowed to.
What?
Yeah,
not for cats?
I'm kidding.
You can't get meat and dairy for your dogs.
If it's milk and meat that are cooked together, you're not allowed to feed your dogs because you're getting benefit from it.
But
and one of the prohibitions of Buster Bakhala is the benefit from it. What? Yeah, you can do that.
But you can't give dogs shaved meat?
Shaved meat is fine.
Really?
Yeah, but not that meat.
Wait, I heard person say.
Is it all pets or is it just dogs specifically?
Doesn't that become trade?
I assume with the old pets. Cause
well, but the problem is the milk and the meat. You're not allowed to get benefit from milk and meat cooked together. That's it.
That's all.
Hey, reverse. Let's get the benefit from it.
Or eat it, or cook it.
Also, they eat flies, but probably don't count as meat.
But you don't feed it.
So we got this big discussion over here.
Yes.
So is it all pets you can't feed?
Correct.
So what about a fly trap?
They like, don't eat
put,
milk.
Like, put a drop of milk onto a piece of meat, and because they eat raw meat, they you can, like feed the raw meat.
Has to be cooked together.
No. They eat raw meat. Feed the fly traps.
So you're gonna cook it with milk,
and then yeah, give it to a fly trap. Yeah, is that okay?
It's your Venus fly trap.
Yes.
And so it's going to grow more if you do that.
Perhaps. Or it might kill it. I'm not
guessing.
Sure.
Get out of here.
Well, that may make a big difference.
Who's the best baseball player in the world?
These questions are what I think.
Roof. Get out of here. I want you out of here. I guess I should have said Ted Williams.
But what did I miss?
Yeah, but Ted Williams didn't even play for the Yankees.
Venus flytrap.
The motion vines. Well,
The motion vines are going on.
Burger. Told us a joke. He said, a guy and a dog walk into a bar, and the guy doesn't have money, wants to get drinks. So he tells the bartender, hey, I'll get us off the top, you give me a drink? Fine.
Yeah,
he says, what's
down
on top of the house?
It's there.
The guy says, get out of here, come on, it's a joke, what are you doing here? No, it's okay, I got one more, I'll get the dog.
Ready?
How does this sandpaper feel? Rough. That's it, get out of here, get out right now. Okay, last one, trust me, last one. Who is the best baseball player in the world? Roof. Babe Ruth, right? And then
they walk out,
he kicks him out, and the dog turns to the owner and says, I guess I should have said Ted Williams.
Oh, yeah.
Very funny joke.
Butcher that joke,
Tyler. Very funny joke.
Okay, so what are we talking about? Shiloh Chagim. So the Rashbam has this idea that it actually has to do with sensitivity, it has to do with Rachmanis. Okay, it does have to do with Rachmanis. Comes along the room, bam. So Ramban has a very interesting idea. I underlined it for you. I'll just tell you outside. The Ramban has this idea that when you go ahead and you kill the mother and the child on the same day, it's like a miniature genocide.
Huh.
It's like a miniature genocide. It's like you don't care about this whole species because they can't reproduce because he killed the offspring and he killed the mother. So he killed the children she already had. She can't have any more because he killed her too. And they're not going to have any more because they're dead.
Like the entire line of like defense, not defense, descendants.
Right. You killed off like a whole line of this species. It's almost like you were doing a genocide to the species. Wow. So that's the Ramban. So okay. When you compare these two answers we saw so far, it sure seems like each one of them is stressing a different element. That's clear. But even in the Pasuk, because when the Pasuk starts off and it says what? Don't take them together. Well, that sounds like the Ramban. But when you say Shalech Tishlach, I say, what? So the Ramban sounds like you're not allowed to take them together. But the Rashbam sounds like Shalach Tishlach HaSeim. That you have to have a sensitivity. You can't have like a Rav Sonis. So when you go ahead, you don't care, you're going to, you know, not sure away, you just want to take them no matter what. You're not being considerate of the mother. So that sounds like an Achazarius and a Rav Sonis. So it sounds like, you know, one could make a solid argument. They're not really arguing. It's just that one's focused on the mitzvah's athlete, one's focused on the mitzvah's listening. The Ramban says more. Because of Harav Mori Nevuchim, who wrote the Mori Nevuchim?
The Rambam.
Maimonides. Kitam shiloch again metamos of esbenolus yishul b'yam echad keili lahazir shal yishchayt ha-ben b'einei ha-eim. The problem is that you're not allowed to shecht the baby in the eyes of the mother. That's in the case of Oso Vespino, right? Ki yesh la behemos da'aga gedola bazeh. Because that creates a tremendous, da'aga usually means like a worry, but it's a tremendous pain to the mother. Ve'ein hefresh ben da'agas ha'adum da'agas ha'behemos al b'neim. There is no difference emotionally between people and animals in this regard. You didn't hear that, huh?
I disagree.
You disagree?
Yeah.
That what?
People and humans have the same...
Do or do not.
You're right. People are humans.
They don't.
Yeah.
When, in terms of this, he's saying, not everything. He's saying in terms of if the children are being killed in front of the mother, so that's a tremendous pain to the animals.
It's not the same.
Humans.
Fish. Humans have more emotion, I would say, to them.
But how do you know?
I don't. But Hashem created humans, and dogs are for humans.
Well, I mean, the emotional layout of the brain is very similar between all animals.
If you're at home, you're staying at home for the day, and
really?
Your mom leaves.
Over the land.
Are you going to get sad?
Just if I see her leave. No, okay, I have the knowledge to know just coming back.
Yeah, dogs don't have the knowledge, so they get much
birds
more emotional.
No, it's there.
Do they have?
It's small.
Well,
so what?
I'll be honest with you, okay?
That's the big question.
The Rambam lived when? When was the Rambam?
Right in between the Golden and the Rishon. 1500s.
Earlier.
1400 to 1300.
Earlier.
1688 to 1743.
Earlier.
1100.
My mind is looking at
11.
No,
okay.
And a half.
He died in 1206. I forgot. He died the end of the 1100s. That was like 12th century.
Wow, that's a long time.
Long time ago. So
yesterday.
The Rambam was, you know, on the coattails of Aristotle's philosophy, but the time period the Rambam was in, there wasn't science like we know it. So this is a piece of information you definitely should file away. That the time that the Rambam lived in, what science was the following calculation. So notice the Rambam made a claim. So the Rambam was a super genius. So he's going to follow up his claim with a proof. And we're about to see it. Now what we would do, is what Ariel is just suggesting, well, we mapped the brain of the lizards and like comes out to be very simple. We'll do some kind of scientific research to try and indicate, well, what is the truth over here? What parts of the brain are stimulated by emotions? Does it appear equal in animals and humans and something like that? The Rambam didn't have that type of science. It wasn't accessible to him. It didn't exist yet. So if you were living in his time, how would you go about proving this?
You find a bird.
You do the exact thing you're not supposed to do and figure it out.
How?
And watch what happens.
No, seriously. How would you do it?
You got it from when you book a parasol on.
You find
for real
similar events.
No, he got in a bull or something. Who knows?
You make it up.
The answer is you have to figure out what emotions are rooted in. You have to use philosophical premises, meaning logically, so what is the difference between animals and humans? We know that the difference between human and animal, that humans have certainly a qualitatively different seichel. The intellect of a human is qualitatively different from an animal. I think everyone can agree to that. Now again, they didn't have science to back that up, but that was agreed upon. So the question is, what about emotions? Are emotions rooted in the intellect? And the Rambam's argument is, no. Emotions are not rooted in the intellect. If that's the case, so then who's to say that the emotions are not exactly the same in an animal and a human? Well, a human has an advantage over the animals in his intellect. But why in the world would one suggest that emotions are not parallel between the two?
I think similar. I think like monkeys have similar emotions to humans. Like they cry when they're young if they get
Monkeys especially are sort of like in between animal and human, you know? have an interesting place.
Ezra, did you hear that? Okay. We'll give Ezra credit if he writes this down like his summary. Who attended if you heard the comment about Harambe in the middle of the year? Okay.
Right, that's pretty predictable, though.
So, that's how the Rambam, that's the Rambam's claim. Now, we'll just continue for a minute in the Ramban, because this is all a quote from the Ramban, and then we'll try to, you know, go in a little bit of a different direction. V'yoser nachon, more correct, says the Ramban, bavushla nis achzar. I think more correct is that really the mitzvah is about not being cruel. Wait, is that what the Rambam just said?
Of course not.
Wait, back up a minute, I'm confused. What was the Rambam's explanation of this mitzvah?
It's about not going to genocide.
That was Ramban himself. Ramban himself says, we're not coming to genocide. And he quoted the Rambam. The Rambam says that really the issue is not killing the children in the eyes of the mother, because it's a tremendous pain for the mother, and there's no difference emotionally between animals and humans. And Ramban says, I don't agree. I think it's really about not being cruel. What did I miss?
It's kind of both.
What was the difference between the Rambam and the Ramban, the Rashbam? The Rashbam and the Ramban are saying the same thing now, not being cruel. The Ramban added the miniature genocide and quotes the Rambam to be saying something different, but we're not sure how it's different. What did the Rambam say differently? You're not allowed to do it in the eyes of the mother because it causes pain to the mother.
From the perspective of the animal versus the perspective of the guy who's actually doing it.
Correct. Now, are we concerned about the feelings of the animal, or are we concerned for the growth, the emotional growth, the sensitivities of Klal Yisrael? Is that what we're concerned about? And we don't really care, per se, about the feelings of the animal. So it's cruelty because we don't want to do things that are cruel actions. But we don't really care about the feelings of the animal.
We don't.
That's
Shem,
Ramban's,
wants us to be
that's the Ramban's pushback.
I think it said somewhere, Shem wants us to be compassionate to animals for our sake, so we gain compassion.
Right. That's what the Ramban pushes. Okay. So, we have three explanations. It's really kind of two that are three, you know what I mean? It's really two that are three, but it's three explanations for what's going on so far. Sensitivity, miniature genocide, and then sensitivity, but it's sensitivity to the animal versus sensitivity that we need to cultivate within ourselves. Okay. Problem is that there's a contradiction between the Medrash we started with and a Mishnah. What's the contradiction? So I quoted it for you. And Ramban deals with it, but let's just see it inside and ponder on our own. So you see the Mishnah? The next source? Yeah. You want to read it? You
read it? Sure. עכשיו ולא יהיה סורבן באותה שעה עניין הוא מתחיל בתחילת הברכה שאת האבא.
Okay, so what does that mean? אומר כאן ציפור הגיעו רחמך. When we say on the bird's nets should arrive your mercy. So what do we do to such a person? Mishtakin or so.
Shut him
up. We say, be quiet. So the guy gets up to the Omer to daven, and instead of doing the regular Shemoneh Esrei, he's Everyone says, go away, get out of here, get another chazen. Not just because it takes longer to say a few more words, but, which is probably the real reason nowadays you're
basically saying that,
I think today was too fast, but
yes, it's a mission. So there's something going on with the person that's saying this, and there are going to be a few different angles on what exactly the problem is. Is it the contrast with you're not having mercy on people? Mercy on a lot of people, I need to dive into you? Like, is that what it is? So the Rambam says a specific pshat based on the Gemara. So listen to this. Inyan, Amro Kansipur Girachamecha, Hushi Yomer Keshem Shachastal Kansipur, just like Hashem. You have mercy on the nest of a bird. You say you're not allowed to take the mother along with the children. So too, you should have mercy on us. Because he's not saying you don't. Rambam looks at it that he's saying, obviously, you will have mercy on us because you even have mercy on the birds.
If a person says that, we quiet him. Why? So I underlined it. Lefishahu Omer, because it's as if he's saying, Shetam mitzvah zu, the reason for this mitzvah is biglal rachamea kadosh baruch al ha'of. It's because Hashem has mercy on the chickens, on the birds. The enokein, and it's not true. It's not true? Hashem doesn't have rachamim on the birds? Lefisha ilu haya derech rachamim, because if this mitzvah is really about mercy, and Hashem has mercy on all the animals, lo haya mater shchita klal, He would have made us vegetarians. Elehi mitzvah shemis she'ein latam. It's a cloak, and it doesn't have a reason. That's the Rambam in his Perush HaMishnayos.
And his Perush on, I mean, that's his opinion on Shlokhan.
That's what he says in the Perush HaMishnayos. We saw the Rambam in the Mor Nevuchim seems to have a different shot. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim says it's sensitivity to the animals. So what just happened? The Rambam doesn't like to follow Mishnayos. Okay, so now back up for a minute in the Ramban that we were reading. And the Ramban quotes this. And he says, and the Rambam himself says, and don't ask me kashas, because you're gonna, I know you're gonna tell me, oh, but there's a Mishnah, Mr. Maimonides. There's a Mishnah. And the Mishnah it says, if a person says, oh, konsipur yagir rachamecha, we shut him up. Kizu achas mishtei svaris. Because that's one of two possibilities for why we quiet him. Svaris mishi yira, ki ein tam lemitzis alecheva tapoyre. That's the person who holds, as the Rambam himself explained in his Perush HaMishnayos, that this person is saying that that's the reason for the mitzvah. So if a person claims the reason for the mitzvah, or at least if he davens, that this is the reason for the mitzvah, we say he's wrong. Says the Rambam, we don't pass in that way. What do you mean? V'anachnu machzikim b'svar ha'shnia she'bechol ha'mitzvah's tam. We pass in, all mitzvahs have reasons. Interesting angle of the Rambam, no? Rambam says, the Gemara explains that the reason we quiet a guy who says this in tefillah is because he's claiming the reason for the mitzvah is mercy, is rachamim. Rambam says, that is pshat in the Mishnah. We pass on that. We pass again, all mitzvahs have reasons. The reason we shut him up is because he's claiming there's a reason for a mitzvah that does not have a reason. Says the Rambam, no, all mitzvahs have reasons.
We just don't know the reasons.
So we now know, okay, maybe challenging to figure it out. But all mitzvahs have reasons. This opinion held that they don't. Or at least there are some that don't. There's some that don't. We'll say it like that.
But then that's kind of
messed up. What do you mean by that?
You can't, you're basically saying that God's been slaughtered, they're pointless, like they're just there.
No, so if you take a look, for example, in Rashi, in Leviticus 18:18, maybe 17:17? Oh, shoot. Maybe 17:17. So Rashi over there, so he writes that sometimes a Kaddish Baruch Hu gives us a mitzvah because he wants to see if we're going to listen. That's exactly what it is. I want to see if you believe in me. I want to see if you're going to follow me. You know, like when Kalisha left Mitzrayim.
That's like setting us up for failure, though. It's not a failure. Why give us like a crazy mitzvah just to see if you believe me?
Well, I was about to compare it to Mitzrayim.
Some people may go off the derech because they think Shlach HaKin is a crazy mitzvah and it's poor animals just because Hashem wanted to defend and really believed in him.
And then some will not.
Like, why set us up for that?
Maybe I'm wrong, but I feel in one of the DP camps after World War II, so Rabbi Eliezer Silber, who ended up in Cleveland eventually, so he was approached by a person who refused to be religious anymore. And he said to him, like, why are you putting on your with that? He says, no, I refuse. So he says, why? He says, because in the camp, so there was one guy in the whole camp, or our barracks, whatever it was, that had tefillin. And so everybody, of course, wanted to put on the tefillin. And so he said, you want to put on the tefillin? You got to give me your rations for the day. And he used to charge their rations, so the tefillin. He's like, when I saw that, I'm finished. I am finished. Disgusting. Sir Bielez is super, you know, there's nothing you can say about it. That is disgusting. See, he turned to him and he says, I hear you saying, but you're only looking at that one nasty person. What about all the hundreds, thousands, whatever it was of people that came to him and were willing to give up their rations for the day just to put on to him? You're focusing on that one nasty guy. What about the masses who were so devoted? You know, so it's kind of like that. He said, yeah, there's always going to be people that have issues and struggles and challenges. But in general, the idea is that Kadosh Baruch Hu says, Klal Yisrael, come, I did the makas for you. We're leaving the tribe. Let's go. Where are we going, God? There! Dude, that's desert, man. There's no water. There ain't no food. Dude, why are we doing this? And Hashem says, are you coming? Are you coming?
He's just like, because.
And Klal Yisrael, you're like, okay! You know?
Yeah, but if he's God, like, why wouldn't you believe that? That someone's gonna, that it's all
gonna be thing.
They just saw him turn an entire river into blood, and they saw him create a gigantic...
But that was considered to be a tremendous...
So, yeah, so why wouldn't you trust him if he said, like, okay, go into the desert, I'll take care of you. It's like, okay. Like you can do all this, of course you can take care of me.
So some people, some people did feel like that. Some
people
did
feel like that. Skeptical. That never made sense to me. The God just... Whatever.
It doesn't, yeah...
They were a skeptical bunch.
I wonder why Paul chased after them.
He was a skeptical bunch too.
Pashut Pshat is that everybody always has to have free will. Some suggest the idea of hardening Pharaoh's heart was not that Hashem took away his free will, it was that Hashem gave him free will.
What's it?
I never understood that. What is that supposed to mean?
Think about it.
He gave
if Hashem took away his free will, it means Hashem made Pharaoh basically do things that he didn't want.
No, I get that part. Talking about, like, although if he's something to do that, then otherwise Pharaoh would have done something else. Which means that he changed his mind. He would have done something else. Unless if Hashem didn't do this. If Hashem did.
No,
didn't,
but the point is that is this simply Hashem using Pharaoh as a pawn? Or it was actually Pharaoh's decision? Because he didn't perceive everything Hashem was doing as out of the ordinary.
Even if it's an ordinary plague of boils and floods of blood and gigantic frog attack.
Well, you know the story, right? There's a guy in the city, probably Washington Heights, and he's driving around looking for a parking spot. I don't know if you've ever tried this, but it's super complicated, especially a 12-seater van. Anyway, so drives around, he can't find a spot, and he's getting late for some important meeting, who knows what, and he starts doubting, he's like, Kushberg, please, I'm not religious, but I will be religious, I will put on tefillin, I will daven every day, I will keep Shabbos, please, I need to find a spot, I have a meeting with this guy, he could make me $1 million, please, Hashem, please, never mind, found a spot, good.
No, but where does free will extend, like,
you know? You know the story with the boy in his hat?
Hat.
You know this one? He's walking on the beach, the mother's walking on the beach with her son. It's a beautiful day, and all of a sudden it gets super cloudy. And all of a sudden, she hears thunder, it gets really windy, and then, bam, there's like this huge wave that's coming straight at them. There's no way out. It knocks them both over. She manages to somehow like grab onto who knows what and sweeps the kid out into the sea. He's gone. And she's freaking out. So she starts down to the Kadosh Baruch Hu, please send my son back. Please give him back to me. I'll keep Shabbos. I'll light Shabbos candles every Friday. I'll do anything. Please just send my son back. And all of a sudden, just like that, the son comes out and her son, comes riding on the crest of a wave safely right onto the shore beside her. She's like, thank you. But he had a hat. Where's the hat? No hat? No deal. You know? What is this? Right. That's the way it goes.
This is why you have to read the terms and conditions.
Feels like people feel that way, you know? Like, you know. There's always some detail that God didn't do. He's not really God. It's something else. You know? It's always a way out.
So God did give power for free will?
So there's two ways to look at it. The Rambam certainly says he took away his free will and he used him as a pawn. I think it's the Sfarno who suggested he actually gave him free will, that he upped his perception so that it didn't affect him emotionally, that there was so much going on, he was able to make a choice and say, no, I think this is what I want to do. I want to choose.
And he also when they charge,
it never makes sense because if I know that I'm going to, then he realizes opening a Pandora's box.
Yeah.
Let's say I shoot someone, right?
Okay.
I murder someone, cause someone, right?
A bird.
Yeah, let's say.
I had the choice to kill him, but
you have the
but I know that there's something bad is gonna happen to me. So on one hand, I won't do it. So isn't that choice kind of taken away? Because
the choice is always there. You're right. When a person realizes,
not, I won't
When a person perceives consequences, so it may mean that he's not going to do it. But he has the ability to choose. It's just that it's a dumb decision.
But I won't. Like, I won't. I mean, because
I want. That's all right. Even the malachim technically have free will. Technically. It's just that they perceive things so clearly that they would never do it. But occasionally we've found that a malach doesn't have air.
I have a question.
Azan. Yeah.
Choosing to go right or choosing to go left, is that considered free will?
What do you mean?
Like, if I decide, like, oh, I'm going to go right today, or I'm going to go instead of going left, is that considered free will? Like, what if...
Yeah, but it's just not so significant. Maybe it's significant in the long run. Who knows? Rav Dessler writes like this. We have a battlefront. And when we speak about Bechira, usually what we mean to say is that there's some sort of challenge for us, and we have to figure out like how to negotiate the challenge. So there's certain things that we're not going to have free will about, and certain things we will have free will about. And it's in two different directions. So listen to this mushroom.
Is free will what makes humans different than animals? Like, is that
the
main difference?
One of the things.
So is anything that a human does with a free will decision, because animals do have some form of
choices.
They can choose, like, okay, I'll do this and this. Right. But I'm guessing where you're about to go, like, they can't make moral decisions.
That's for sure. That's based on intellect, like we were saying before. But I think Odessa's point is an awesome point. He says that there's a battlefront. So on the battlefront is our choices, whether it's moral or whatever. I guess it's an area of challenge. So I guess if you want to call it moral, I guess, and maybe that's a way to say it. But in our area, there's a challenge. So there are certain things that we can't make a decision about. Probably not one of us has free will to just decide we're going to stop everything we're doing and just learn for 18 hours a day. Probably don't have the free will to do that. Except for Tyler.
I think all of us have it in us.
Yeah, but you couldn't do that now. You could do that now? If I gave you the option right now.
To do 18 straight hours.
But you have to start for 18 hours. Oh, well, it will work out. You know, Parnas will work it out.
That's like 3 in the morning.
Would you do it? 18 hours a day.
If I start
that, I'm going to the bathroom.
Go to the bathroom, but you can't check your phone in the bathroom longer than you got to go. Go to your bathroom. You need to do it. Go to 18 hours a day. Can you do it?
Jeremy, we're already like
really?
I think so.
How long would you last?
A week?
A week.
Sure, I can't do one day.
It's hard.
I'm insane.
It's really hard.
Can't even do a street for 3 hours.
At the same time, though, we probably also don't have the free will to smoke a cigarette on Shabbos. Because who's going to do that? You have free will to do that? You smoke a cigarette on Shabbos?
No, I don't have free will. What does that mean?
Or
not choice.
Or like,
are you getting reward right now for not killing?
Oh, like, you don't see anyone right now.
It's not
like
a choice.
I might be, probably not.
I'm not interested. I'm partially not interested right now.
Wait, 2 minutes.
But I'm not interested.
That's not the definition of free will.
Free will means I have a challenge in front of me.
You're just deciding not to.
No.
You're not deciding not to kill. Unless you really want to kill the guy.
Okay. Well,
if you really want to kill him, you hold yourself back.
You made
a choice.
It's like a passive action.
If you wanted to. Anytime there's something you want to do on Shabbos.
That's free will.
Yeah, you want
to
do it.
Wanting it not and wanting not to.
Right.
Yeah, but you're telling me that, oh, I don't have the free will to smoke and Shabbos because I'm just not going to think about it. No.
You're not getting rewarded for that. So in terms of your free will to do it, that's hard to argue. It's hard to argue. You're right. Technically, it's free will. Lamaise? What is that? You're not going to do it.
It's free will.
You're not going to do it.
It's
the same thing as 18 hours a day.
No, I'm not learning to. Like, unless
you could technically choose it, but you're not going to. It's ridiculous.
That's
the
purview.
So free will
is
the battlefield.
It's the hard topic in Judaism, by the way.
Free will is the battlefield. It's the front, the battle front. That's where we make our choices. And that's where we get rewarded. That's where we have free will. Because you could argue that the opposite, that's not free will. But it's not true. That's the free will. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu looks at us and he says, this is where your choice lies. Because that's where your challenge is right now. There are things that you conquered already, so that's what I'm calling the cigarettes on Shabbos and murder or whatever else. And there are things that are not shaykh to you yet. And sometimes the battlefront shifts backwards, sometimes the battlefront shifts forwards.
When it shifts forward, that's so difficult.
That's the next level, so you move forward and conquer more territory.
It's like, oh, I just want, all right, next thing, now I'll harder battle.
That's what it's all about.
Well, that's not, I mean, that's fair.
It's like you conquer one thing you want.
Oh, that's tough. Does every animal have a neshama, or no?
No, none of them do. Not a technical neshama. They have some kind of nefesh. They have an element of life.
What does that mean? What does that mean, nefesh?
Only Jews have
there are like two, three levels of soul stuff.
Because like animals,
plants have a something, no?
Something.
They've got godliness inside them, no? In
yeah.
some way?
Yeah.
Something. So three
humans have more. Yeah,
no, this is Judaism, not Hinduism.
What happens
is God. Plants are people too.
So free will is choosing between right and
wrong. Shia, I disagree with you. There's,
like,
there's God
doing what's. Doing what's
hmm? There's God.
Well, what's right? asking
yeah,
us
God
from Hashem?
Constantly
right.
creating the
what Hashem wants from
us. I don't think that there's
steak and
a soul,
you know, chicken
and plants.
Not
there's godliness in everything.
I think what that depends on is the family.
The difference between God and Hashem is everywhere.
The Chobos
are
above
us. Like animals are
above
us.
Well,
you guys.
The
Chobos are above us writes that on the surface, when you first start to think about it, it seems like there are basically, you know, three areas of decisions. There's decisions that are, you know, mitzvah, there are decisions that are avera, and the decisions that are advar rishos, optional areas. Certain things you have to do, certain things you're not allowed to do, certain things you look up to. And then after a discussion, he says, at the end of the day, it's not true. Because the choice you're making only goes in one of two directions. Either brings you closer to Hashem, or it brings you farther from Hashem. Because if you're staying the same, I guess you're not progressing when you accomplish it. So either it's bringing you away, or it's not. Bringing you closer, or it's not. So if it's bringing you closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, so how could you not do it? You have to. If it's not bringing you closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, then why are you doing it? Then you shouldn't. So you have to ask yourself, it's a little bit hard, right? Which glasses frame should I pick? So you have to ask yourself, I have to get glasses frames. Is there something about this one that's going to bring me closer to Kadosh Baruch Hu, or something about this one that's not? If my focus on trendy, am I being too gashmi? If I don't get those bedafka, will I now be a better Jew because I'm not so focused on the physical? So is that choice of frames for my glasses actually my avodas Hashem right now? And you can do that with every single thing. What should I eat for lunch? How long is it going to take to prepare? What's it going to cost me in terms of learning later in the day? Is it going to make me sleepy and fall asleep in Seder? There's so many decisions that we make and that seems on the surface like it's very mundane. It doesn't make a difference. And every single one of those decisions ultimately can be made into an avodas Hashem. And that's what Chovos Levavos says. That's supposed to be our attitude. So ultimately the answer is everything's really going to be free will because there's going to be a challenge in all the things you're doing.
That's a crazy high level.
One way or another.
To think of that way.
What happens
okay.
to animals?
Vector. It's a vector.
Yeah.
Yes.
What?
What happens to animals after they die?
All dogs
or
go to heaven. But! No, yeah, no, that's, you know.
Souls get recycled into other animals that are born.
What?
Souls, whatever animal souls they have, you're recycled into the next animal.
No, seriously. No, what happens?
Use resources efficiently.
No one says anything about it.
If they live a good animal life, they come back as people.
They have a life force. They keep them active.
So
well, they're alive. They're dead.
So the end result of this whole conversation is that Shiloh Kane is a hoax.
So here we have a contradiction. Bottom line, I'll sum it up and we're going to be done. The bottom line is that the Rambam, on the one hand, the more Nevuchim writes, there's a reason for it. There's a reason for sensitivity of animals. The Rambam, in his Perush Mishnaya, says the Mishnah doesn't reflect that. The Mishnah says that it doesn't have a reason. But, says the Rambam, we don't paskin like this Mishnah. We paskin all mitzvahs have reasons. Now, the Ramban has what to say about this, and the Ramban thinks that ultimately we are focused on our personal growth, but we're going to leave that aside for a minute. I just want to point out one more thing to you, and we're going to stop with this. The question that everyone's asking is this a contradiction between the Medrash that we started with and this Mishnah? What would the contradiction be? Because doesn't the Medrash say that the mitzvah is about rachamim? Hashem has rachamim on the birds. Isn't that what it said?
Yeah.
So then that would be a direct contradiction to the Mishnah that says you're not allowed to say that. So on the one hand, one may argue, you know, one may argue that, well, that's what the Rambam is saying, that the Medrash reflects the mainstream opinion and the Mishnah reflects the Das Yachid. Alone in the beginning was that that's not necessarily true. You don't have to say, the Rambam doesn't really say that. You don't have to say that. Because the Medrash is saying that there's an element of rachamim, even in mitzvahs that are cruel. And what is the element of sensitivity that's in this mitzvah of shiluach haken? So we saw, number one, the possibility of not committing genocide, major genocide. We saw sensitivity to animals, sensitivity to our development, cultivation of our sensitivities. So the sefer called the Hona Ashir was Rav Raphael Emanuel Chai, who lived from 1688 to 1743. So he says, the truth of the matter is, and I have this translated for you over here, if you take a look in Kabbalah, that this mitzvah Shiluach HaKen is a totally different idea. It actually is a cruel mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to shoo away the mother bird, and she doesn't want to be sent away from her children. And the truth of the matter is that it's an act of cruelty. And I would argue, just like Bris Mila, just like Osov Es Bno, just like Shchita, there are certain things we do that are cruel, but there are elements of Rachamim in it. Elements of Rachamim. Because it has to be elements of Rachamim in everything that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does. That's what the Medrash is saying. That's my suggestion to you. So take a look at this Zayar. It says, Tachazi, come and see. There's an angel appointed over the birds. And when Israel performs this commandment, and the mother departs, the bird departs, weeping, so to speak, and her children crying, so to speak, he agonizes for his birds. Whom agonizes for his birds? The Malach, the angel. And asks God, does it not say, Berachem HaVakol Masav, that his, meaning Hashem's, compassion is on all of his works? Why did you decree on that bird to be exiled from her nest? And what does the Holy One do? He gathers all of his other angels and says to them, this angel is concerned for the welfare of a bird and is complaining of its suffering. Is there none amongst you who will seek merit on my children Israel and for the Shekhinah who is in exile and whose nest in Jerusalem has been destroyed and whose children in exile under the hand of harsh masters? Is there no one who seeks compassion for them and will attribute merit to them? The idea of shooing away the mother bird is exactly Klal Yisrael. The babies are Klal Yisrael. The mother is the Shekhinah. The nest is Yerushalayim.
Isn't there a song like that?
Probably. If not, there should be. And Josh Geller is going to write it. A song on it, comparing Shiluach HaKen.
The song, The Little Bird. They literally, in the song, it says, the nest is like Mashiach or something like that.
Like,
the Little Bird. Huh? I'm just getting the lyrics.
So that's what he says, is that the truth of the matter is, according to Kabbalah, the mitzvah is actually a mitzvah, the opposite of Rachamim. It's a mitzvah that's actually cruel. But what it accomplishes in Shamayim is a resulting Rachamim for a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Then the Holy One issues a command and says, for my sake I shall act, and I shall act for my sake. I'm going to do something to help out Klal Yisrael. So the Shiluach again actually produces a Rachamim on Klal Yisrael, because of this whole mechanism that it's cruel, and then the Malach gets upset, and he says, what's going on over here? Kodesh Baruch Hu says, well, I don't hear anybody say anything about Klal Yisrael, they're in the same position. What's going on over here? Then the Kodesh Baruch Hu forces his hand, so to speak, and then he does something to help Klal Yisrael. So that's what he writes, that you see from here that Shiluach HaKen is actually pain to the bird, and nonetheless it causes, indirectly, causes Rachamim to come to the world.
Hey, Rabbi,
yeah?
Isn't like the fact that we take bunch of eggs from chickens, isn't it worse?
So that kind of comes back to the same point, I think. If you want to take all the arguments that we said in the beginning about mercy, I think it's hard to understand. But if you're going to suggest that this mitzvah, shooing away the mother bird, is specifically a mitzvah in a very specific scenario, that you have this... Well, let's add this last point and then come back to it. The last point that he makes is that, going back to that medrash, it's not pshat that it's a mitzvah of rachamim. Pshat is that there's an element of rachamim, but what is the element? So I said originally, well, when it quotes a pasuk, it means the end of the pasuk, or in this case, the second pasuk. But really, you can focus on, that's what he does, he focuses on the actual pasuk that's quoted. Ki kare kan sipur. It's not a mitzvah to go looking for it. If you happen to notice it, so then, go ahead. But it's not a mitzvah you go looking for, because at the end of the day, it's a pain to the animal. So it's not a mitzvah to go chasing after. It's a mitzvah that if it happens to you, so then there's a message to you that's there. There's something that has to happen for Rachamim on Klal Yisrael. So perhaps that answers your question also. At the end of the day, there is an element of cruelty there. So yeah, okay, but we need an egg. You take the egg. That's what it is. Why are you shooing away the mother bird? The answer is, in the shooing away the mother bird is Mamash at Tefillah, Takash Baruch Hu, Yisha Rachamim on Klal Yisrael.
Also, are eggs, how do we know eggs are kosher?